Well, hello there. First off, thank you for tuning in and for downloading this podcast. We here at Portland Community College are glad to have you on board for our journey exploring sustainability and environmental justice in higher education. If you have a good story to share or would just like to know more, please do pop on the web and go to pcc.edu/sustain. There you can find ways to connect or see what else we're up to. PCC was just ranked second overall in North America on the ASHE 2018 Sustainability Campus Index for Associate Colleges, and we're happy to share with you how we got here. Now that we've got this plug out of the way, we'll get into the episode. Thanks again for tuning in. From Portland Community College, this is PCC Sustain Me. I'm Joe Culhane, and today my guest is Kate Rayner-Fried from Western Washington University, and we'll be talking about the ethics of care.
Boom, boom, darkness falls, headlights in the afternoon.
So, ASHE 2018 Conference and Expo just wrapped up this past weekend. The Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education had this year's annual conference in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I must say, that is a beautiful part of this planet. The conference was themed around the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs for short, which have been crafted by the United Nations. These goals are to be met by 2030 in hopes to curb our carbon emissions and ideally not have us collectively head quite so quickly off of the cliff. One thing's for certain, we cannot go forth practicing the detrimental business as usual if we are going to realistically move away from the cliff's edge and get on any sort of sustainable track, or perhaps solar road. Over the course of the conference, I had a good handful of takeaways and moments to remember, though one that stands out was the conference session I attended called Sustaining Our Communities Through Care and Action. This session was filled with so many important elements and ideas that I resonated with that it's going to be challenging to succinctly pick a few to describe to you. Thankfully, after Kate's session, I asked if she'd be willing to sit down with me and share some of her thoughts and reflections on her session and about the ethics of care. Before we get into that great talk I had with Kate, I would first like to acknowledge that this program is being recorded on the traditional village sites of the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Bands of the Chinook, Tualatin Kalapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes who made their homes along the Columbia River. Multnomah is a band of Chinooks that lived in this area. We thank the descendants of these tribes for being the original stewards and protectors of these lands since time immemorial. We also acknowledge that Portland, Oregon has the 9th largest urban Native American population in the U.S., with over 380 federally recognized tribes represented in the urban Portland metropolitan area. We also acknowledge the systemic policies of genocide, relocation, and assimilation that still impact many Indigenous Native American families today. We are honored by the collective work of many Native nations, leaders, and families who are demonstrating resilience, resistance, revitalization, healing, and creativity. We are honored to be guests upon these lands. Thank you, and thanks also to our colleagues at the Portland State University Indigenous Nation Studies Program for crafting this acknowledgement. Well, I'm finishing this episode up today on what is now called Indigenous Peoples Day in many parts of America, which is a good step in the right direction for telling better stories moving forward. I won't even mention what it used to be called. And I would also like to add that Kate started off her presentation with these words which were very thoughtful and showed a sense of honor and respect for the lands we were on in what we now call Pittsburgh. And here they are. Before we begin, we need to take a few moments to acknowledge the history of the land we are on and the people who have lived and continue to live here since time immemorial. Here in Pittsburgh, we are currently occupying Haudenosaunee Confederacy land and Osage land, and we did not ask permission to be here. The Haudenosaunee Confederacy is a group of indigenous nations which includes the Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca people. Both the Haudenosaunee and Osage nations are nations that cross borders imposed by settler colonialism. It was encouraging to see and hear the land acknowledgement being incorporated into many of the presentations at ASHI, including right before the opening keynote of the conference. The sustainability movement has been a very privileged and white person's movement for a long time, and it has a ways to go to be genuinely inclusive and equitable in many regards. These land acknowledgments are a good step in the right direction. Okay, one last thing before we jump into this talk. I loved that Kate has a self-declared major called Environmental Consciousness, Society, Culture, and Education. That's awesome. All right, let's hear what Kate had to say on the ethics of care and some of her views on social justice and the sustainability movement.
Okay, that good, yeah. Okay, so the ethics of care philosophy is kind of something that I learned about from some environmental studies courses that I was taking at my university, which is Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington. And it's something that really resonated with me, and so I wanted to share it because I think it's something that we don't really talk about in sustainability movements enough, is that more than just the way that we're talking about sustainability and how that's changing, we also need to be thinking about the processes and procedures and the way that we do our work and how that reproduces injustice or, you know, upholds good things and dismantles injustice. And I think that a lot of people of marginalized identities and intersecting identities experience systems of oppression in the way that we do our work. And so it is something that I think people experience and know about if you're part of a marginalized group. But because the sustainability world tends to be so white and male dominated, then it seems like kind of a new idea. But I think that ethics of care is already manifesting in the way we do our work, and systems of injustice are already manifesting in the way that we do our work. So if we're not being intentional about how we're getting things done, then we are not really doing truly sustainable work. So that's something that I think a lot about. And I think in the discussions that we've been having throughout this conference, and in the sustainability world in general, I've been hearing a lot about wanting to increase diversity in sustainability work and those kinds of things. A way that it was described to me in one of my sessions earlier yesterday was that our job doesn't have to be reaching out to communities and telling them why sustainability is important, but by doing the work within our own communities to make our spaces safe and comfortable and non-oppressive spaces, then people will come because they're already doing sustainable work by doing racial justice work and gender justice work and disability justice work and all of those things. So, awesome. Yeah.
It sprung from Indigenous
Mm-hmm. Can you just maybe talk about that a little bit? Yeah, so from the research that I've done, an ethic of care philosophy, basically what it means to break it down is it's the idea that you need to act with action, intention, and like reciprocal relationship building, like a back and forth, and build relationships in order to have like a caring world and caring work. And that is something that is maybe like a new idea for me when I learned it. Certainly that was like really resonant to me, but is really grounded in a lot of like indigenous knowledge, indigenous feminist knowledge specifically, and has been kind of something that if we think about acts of care and relationships of care as between each other as people, between people in the environment, and also in indigenous knowledge, a lot of times as the environment having a relationship with us as well. So we have a relationship with the environment to sustain it, to use resources in a way that we can protect it in the long run. And then our environment and planet has the responsibility and relationship with us that allows us and all life on Earth to be sustained. So it's really about that, like, back and forth. So when I say that it's like an indigenous feminist ethic and a Black feminist ethic, I guess what I'm referring to is that a lot of these ideas are kind of steeped in like indigenous ways of life, though there is no one indigenous way of life. It is something that is found across cultures and geographies in a lot of spaces. And when I'm talking about like a Black feminist ethic, then I'm also kind of just referring to the fact that like these are not my ideas and they're not new ideas, and ideas about collective liberation, which I think is really tied, which is basically just the idea that until we are all free, none of us are free from oppressive systems, both in terms of like those of dominant groups aren't free when those of marginalized identities aren't free, because if oppression is hurting marginalized folks, then we're also hurting. And also that this oppressive systems that are hurting marginalized folks are also actively hurting dominant folks, because they're placing us in boxes that we can't escape. Like if we think about masculinity and the ways that the patriarchy oppresses women and gender oppressed folks, and then we think about the way that it also oppresses men by forcing certain roles and forcing men into certain spaces and not expressing emotions and not participating in acts of care and those kinds of things. So.
Steps for actions. I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, if you don't mind touching on your made-up, invented program that you're calling your studies in school, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, what is that?
Mm-hmm. So I am doing an interdisciplinary concentration, and it is called Environmental Consciousness, Society, Culture, and Education, or at least that's what it's called right now. I don't know. Its themes are, I like to describe it as like a combination of environmental justice and education ideas, and its three main themes are basically like environmental studies, and then a section that's about social justice, cultural experiences, lived experiences, kind of a mash of that, and then education, both like environmental and otherwise, and organizing skills and those kinds of things. So,
cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then how do you imagine that's integrating, or how would you best, like, you know what I mean? Like, how do we get the ethics of care in a perfect, you know, most radical imagining?
Mm-hmm.
What is your radical imagining of how this gets integrated into curriculum, life, practices, and such? Do you have a vision for that or an idea?
Yeah, I mean, I have some ideas. I think it's really powerful to engage in the process of radical imagining, which is a Black feminist idea again. And I think by like not imagining what a better world could look like, then we're like allowing systems to control us in a certain way. And so by doing that imagining, we're like doing the first steps to creating that world. And in my imagination of what that looks like, a lot of it is like doing, well, one of the things that I talked about in my presentation was the idea that care, acts of care, which can be like really fun and empowering acts, like cooking food for each other, checking in with each other, or childcare, or those things, which I find like personally fulfilling. But they can also be like, since they're acts of healing, they're not necessarily always going to be like nice acts. They can also be like, you need to talk to people who are perpetuating harm, because then you're saying that you as an individual are someone that I feel like is worth putting energy into in order to make the world better and you a better person. And it can also, one thing that I think a lot about is it can look like really looking inside of yourself at your own personal history, privilege, and generational history and those kinds of things, which as a white person, I try to engage in that process and think about how my whiteness manifests in like the work that I do. And that's not always like a particularly pleasant thing to think about, but if I'm imagining a better world, then it is a world where people recognize where they're coming from. And I think that's the way towards like a beautiful, better future. And I also imagine a world where like these systems that, hurt the people and the planet, all of us, where they're gone and what that could look like. Is it would really allow all of us to like participate in acts of care and not be constrained by like society's ideas of what is appropriate behavior. So, I mean, just being able to like check in with each other about our emotions freely and like that not being like a stressful, horrible thing, and people not feeling like they have to take on the labor of like the same people, especially like women and gender oppressed folks and folks of color is mainly the people who I see doing a lot of education for people who could really educate themselves, or doing a lot of childcare, or doing a lot of like cleaning up after people in our workspaces, or having to do a lot of work to just get their voices heard. And so I just imagine in a like future where that, where we're able to just participate in acts of care, then that labor will be shouldered by a greater group of people. And I just know so many people who are doing great work, but who are so overwhelmed, and it would just be so wonderful if we could all just shoulder some of that and be able to like live lives where we can also engage in like fun things and acts of care in fun ways and like self-care and not have to feel like we are not doing enough, because we're all doing some of it. So yeah.
That's awesome. Feel those raindrops?
Yep. I do not know. It is unclear.
Maybe we should
relocate. Yes, I mean, better now than in 3 minutes when it's like horrible.
Well, the rain started as a sprinkle, and by the time we got inside, it was a full-on downpour. So we got out just in the nick of time there. When we gathered ourselves and dropped back into our discussion, we stumbled quickly into one of my favorite areas to explore, that being capitalism, and what it looks like from a systems view of figuring out how to move in a more sustainable direction. Kate took it and spun the question and her perspective in a very thoughtful way that led us down different paths that also ended up examining equity and inclusion as well.
And one of those systems is capitalism, which I think fundamentally like isn't sustainable for anyone in the long run. And I think that there's an interesting thing that's happening, which is the commodification of self-care as an action. And it's like, oh, we should buy bath bombs and just take a lot of baths and like, that's caring, and that's great if that is what empowers you. But I think it's interesting to reframe it as self-care as a part of community care. And so the thing is, if you have community care systems set up within your own like friend communities is one way that I see it manifested, then self-care doesn't have to be like a thing that you have to do in order to keep functioning in the world. Self-care and community care can make it so that you never get to a place of burnout in the first place. So I mean, like in my own friend groups, I have developed relationships that are really reciprocal and wonderful, so that like if I'm feeling really overwhelmed and like I can't like do the things that I'm asked of doing, like people feed me and cook for me and help me clean my apartment, and I do that for them and I give people rides. And so when we're building that kind of community, then like we can still participate in acts of self-care, but it looks a lot different because it's not about buying things in order to make us feel like the world is going to be okay. It's about like building our community so that they are resilient to whatever challenges the world as it currently is throwing at us. So that's one thing that I think a lot about. I don't know. I think one thing that I could touch on is the idea that like, this isn't a new idea, ideas of, like, community care, and I've touched on the fact that, like, it is an Indigenous feminist and Black feminist idea, but also that there are a lot of movements that I take, like, a lot of heart in terms of, like, the environmental justice movement, which we talk about a lot, but maybe has become, like, kind of a buzzword weirdly when it is not about, like, increasing equity and inclusion in sustainability, even though that's, like, great and important. It's about, like, following the leadership of those most affected by environmental harms to solve problems, which I think are two different but conflated things. And so it's not about incorporating people into the framework that we already have. It's about creating a new framework when we realize that, like, the system that we have is not sustainable. So, yeah. I think it's interesting to see the way that that language has been used.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For sure. That's what this podcast is a goal of, at least in part, is to have voices who aren't traditionally heard sharing their stories, suggestions, and solutions moving forward, and things that they're already doing that aren't a part of the mainstream sustainability movement. Because you're right, environmental justice still is environmental sustainability with, like, a thought about justice.
Yeah.
People, but not actually including the people who are the most marginalized, pointing to them perhaps, but not actually opening the doors and bringing in that collaborative effort.
Right. And in order to bring people in, then, like, I think that's where, like, ethics of care really comes in, is that, like, by participating in those, you don't have to go into communities and be like, please join the sustainability community. Like, we really need you because we're trying to be inclusive and diverse. You're just actually doing the work, and people will come because they feel like they aren't going to have to put so much work on themselves and burn themselves out trying to educate you on their own experience. So, and that's something that I think I run up across a lot in the sustainability world, which I deeply love, but it is very white, and I am as well, but I think that we are, like, starting to incorporate ideas of inclusion, but not necessarily, like, it's more about preserving our own ideas of who we are as, like, good white people than dismantling systems and systems change. So, yeah, I don't know.
How do you personally grapple with that? I don't know if that's too far out of a question. Because this
I'll
is
answer
my
that,
challenge
yeah.
right now, and almost full stop, is white, male, straight, all the privileged, you know, categories, and I'm so passionate that I want to be of service and utilize and acknowledge those privileges I have and use them for a powerful voice, and while stepping back,
yeah,
and listening. So I don't know if you can share your own lived experience and, like, again, maybe that radical imagining of what 10 years from now, just to give it, like, some level of actual. You know, not like, what, next year is just going to, the paradigm's going to flip, which it could, and bless it if it does.
Yeah.
But 10 years from now, the care, you know, the ethical care and the actual environmental justice where all voices are heard is existing. What's your, like, would you prefer almost not to be doing sustainability work as a leader? Like, would you prefer to just be working on a farm, or
I think that's a good question.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You don't want to spend your whole life, right, fighting for this and not actually actualizing it. So what would it look like? Can you imagine that?
I can try to. I'm definitely at that point. I'm a senior. I'll be graduating this year. People are starting to ask me what I want to do. And then I'm thinking even farther down. So I'm starting to do that. But it is a bit scary. But, I don't know. In terms of, like, I mean, I think anyone who is involved in sustainability work and justice work ultimately wishes that we lived in a world where that wasn't necessary. And I don't think that's going to happen in the near future. And I also think that sometimes the way that we frame, like, working towards justice issues of many kinds is a lot of people in dominant culture, for example, in white culture, like, I don't see color, and the world is good and beautiful, and in 10 years we just won't even notice that each other are different. And that's not the future that I want, and I don't think it's the future that people who actually have, like, lived experiences that are not part of the dominant culture want either. So I imagine that this work should be going on for a long time, even if we're just like telling stories about our own lived experience and hopefully not experiencing as many harms, but still recognizing that we are all different in good ways. In terms of like the work that I've done myself to kind of like see what that future looks like one thing that I think is really powerful is just practicing receiving criticism and like accountability processes. It's something that I like practice within like my own friend groups and organizing groups of like, what does that look like to make mistakes and then be held accountable for it? Because I think being too afraid of ever making a mistake that you never do anything is also another problem that I see a lot. And I definitely struggle with that as a person who has anxiety and who that is just social interaction is very stressful. But practicing just the practice of getting feedback or comments or someone calling you out and being like, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that you put the time and energy into letting me know that what I was doing was harmful. I'm going to go do some research and this won't happen again. And I think that it seems like a bigger deal than it really is. And so if we could all just like practice not being defensive, because I think defensiveness really holds us back. So that's one thing that I try to do. Otherwise, I just try to do a lot of like intentional thinking about where I come from and who I am and what my position of privilege is, and trying to utilize that in different ways. Like thinking about how whiteness manifests in like the organizing work that I do and my sustainability work that I do as part of my job, but also thinking about the way like, one movement that I'm involved in is like the Justice for Palestine movement. And so as a white Jewish person, like I definitely think about the way that myself being in that spaces is both like really powerful to say like, I don't like condone that behavior and I believe in justice for Palestinians, but also like acknowledging that being in that space is also like something that I need to step back and just listen and just show up when people ask me to be there, but not put myself in positions where I'm taking up a lot of space. So I don't know. It is really tricky, but I think it's not maybe as tricky as people think it is. And that once you just do it once or twice, like, it really isn't too bad, so.
Love them all.
Do you hear that, my fellow white folks? Let us practice taking up less space and do a whole lot more listening. Active listening. Showing up in solidarity when asked to, and being humble in our leadership and activism roles. It was an immense pleasure talking with and listening to Kate Rayner Fried and her views of where we're at in the sustainability and environmental justice movements. I am so thankful to have had this opportunity. As I practice radical imagining here, I imagine collaboration being paramount to our process of healing, collectively and individually. And we can achieve this with intentional, thoughtful care. It becomes ever more clear that this place of great privilege I embody provides me with a great opportunity to care, to acknowledge, utilize, and as much as possible, surrender these unearned privileges so that all may feel comfortable, safe, and most importantly, heard. To see the inherent value in all things and in all people, and finding healing ways to care for the whole system moving forward seems really crucial. So much thanks again to Kate Rayner Fried and for all those who organized and hosted AISHE 2018. And it was an honor, and I give great thanks to the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and Osage lands this conference was held on. And for what it's worth, Pittsburgh is a pretty darn charming city. The intro and outro music on today's episode were by my darling wife, Rachel Robinson, and this episode was recorded, edited, and produced by me, Joe Colhane. Make no mistake, folks, and especially white folks, we've got a lot of work to do moving forward, but it all can be done. One step at a time, and with a great amount of compassion, patience, and humility. And we really do need to embrace a simple and important message moving forward. You know what it is, right? Love them all. Before you go, I thought it would be nice to share a couple of sweet gems of quotes that Kate shared during her conference. And so after we wrapped up our interview, I asked her if she could just share them with us all. So I'm just going to play them through because they're good. Enjoy.
Okay, so in speaking about radical imagining, one quote that gives me a lot of energy to think about the way that we imagine the future is from Angela Davis, and she says, "You have to act as if it were possible to radically transform the world, and you have to do it all the time." And another person who I get a lot of strength from is Audre Lorde, who describes herself as a Black feminist lesbian warrior poet, and she says, "Translate that power and beauty into action wherever you find yourself to be, or you will participate in your own destruction." And again from Audre Lorde, the self-proclaimed Black feminist lesbian warrior poet, from a commencement speech she gave about 35 years ago, which I think really relates to what we're talking about with everyday action, is, "Change, personal and political, does not come about in a day nor in a year. But it is in our day-to-day decisions, the way in which we testify with our lives to those things in which we say we believe, that empower us. Your power is relative, but it is real. And if you do not learn to use it, it will be used against you and me and our children. Change did not begin with you, and it will not end with you. But what you do with your daily life is an absolutely vital piece of that change."